What's the Fed?
The Fed?
FED, Fed? The federal government?
What's the Fed?
What's the Fed?
I don't know.
Most Americans don't know. Yet we give the Fed enormous power. The Fed likes that.
Americans have always been reluctant to give too much financial power away. That's smart. But we still need somebody to foster conditions for a healthy economy.
Really?
Your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today.
The dollar has lost 96% of its value.
He's been in charge for a while.
Not everybody likes it. I think it's good.
He said housing prices wouldn't crash.
It's a pretty unlikely possibility. We've never had a decline in house prices on a nationwide basis.
He also said,
we're not printing money.
But they do. Now she's going to be in charge.
It is definitely one of the most important economic decisions that I'll make.
It's probably the second most powerful job in the world. Yet people don't know what it is.
What's the what?
The Fed.
I don't know.
The Fed is a small group of old white people who get to spend trillions of your dollars in secret.
No secret cabal of government officials should have the authority to create money out of thin air.
Are you fed up with the Fed? That's our show tonight.
And now, John Stossel.
I've done hundreds of TV shows, but there's one topic I've always avoided, the Fed. I know it's important, more important than most stuff I cover, but it's just so complex and dreary. The people in charge even work at being dull. Alan Greenspan called it Fed speak, said he tried to be obscure because he didn't want to spook the markets or tip his hand about the Fed's plans. Bernanke and Janet Yellen are almost as dull. But the Fed is crucially important. It can destroy your savings, affect whether you have a job or a future. I wish there were a simple way to explain what it does, which is why I'm thankful that there's a new film out about the Fed called Money for Nothing. Jim Bruce made the film, and Jim, before we get to your movie, I want to play part of a video made by the Federal Reserve.
The Fed is important because it keeps America's monetary system stable and growing with low inflation, which fosters further growth, which helps keep the economy going in the right direction.
Sounds good. The economy going in the right direction.
You could argue the intentions may be good, but the results aren't always.
And you interviewed Janet Yellen for this film.
Yep.
I chose not to show any of her interview bits because she was even more boring than everybody else. You get the feeling they work at this?
I think there, since Greenspan, there's been this tradition of the Fed trying to operate, you know, outside of the limelight, behind the curtains a little bit, and not give away its policies.
What I especially like about your film is that it covers the rationale for the Fed, the good intentions behind it, and how those intentions sometimes made things worse. The current Fed was created to reassure people when a bank failed.
Bank customers would become suspicious, and they would want to pull their money out of that bank, and then some other people would be afraid that their bank would go, and so people would want to pull their money out of deposits and withdraw the money as currency.
The banks would not have the currency to pay out, and they would just close their doors.
The Brits have the Bank of England, and the Germans have the Reichsbank. Something has to get done here.
Senator Nelson Aldridge summoned New York's most powerful bankers to an island off the coast of Georgia to secretly negotiate plans for an American central bank. Traveling under false names in a private railroad car, the great secrecy of this expedition would foster conspiracy theories for decades to come.
Why would they use false names?
You know, it was thought at that time they were worried about. We had had two central banks in our country, you know, 100 years ago, 1791 and 1816, and we'd gotten rid of them because there was this sense that they would favor the wealthy and the politically connected.
Your documentary says about 10 years after the Fed was created, its leaders decided to stimulate the economy.
The Roaring 20s saw the first instance of a Fed-induced boom and bust. At first, the Fed's low rates unintentionally helped fuel stock market and debt bubbles. An alarmed Fed then clamped down, raising rates aggressively in 1928 and setting the stage for a recession and stock market crash.
Current Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke
has said, we did it, we being the Federal Reserve. We caused the Great Depression, and we won't do it again.
They've wised up. They've learned their lesson.
The lesson that the Fed needs to learn is that it needs to back out of markets. It needs to allow markets to operate more freely. That the Fed creating incentives...
No, they borrowing... say we can manage it. We learned from the Depression. We learned from the inflation. We're going to manage it.
It's not that good at managing the economy, that it should play a more passive role.
So they decide the Depression happened because the Fed didn't create enough money. 40 years later, Congress proclaimed the Fed should also fight unemployment that caused the next crisis, this new mandate, because they printed lots of money, and the extra money caused inflation.
The U.S. had promised to be the world's reserve currency, backed by gold. But the Fed had created far more dollars than it could ever redeem in gold. And now the U.S. could no longer keep that promise.
I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold.
For the first time in history, the dollar was just a piece of paper.
Now, what does this mean for you? Your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today.
Over the next decade, the cost of living more than doubled. The dollar lost more than half its value.
So Nixon was wrong. Imagine that, a politician being wrong. We got inflation, it rose up to 13%.
The Fed keeps making the same mistake over and over again. In the 1970s, it was printing too much money. The dollar lost more than half its value in a period of 10 years, right after Nixon made that promise.
Inflation is low today, and recently they had the confidence to do what they've done over the last few years, try to stimulate the economy by printing lots of money to buy treasury bonds and some dubious bank paper. In total, they've spent almost $4 trillion. A dozen people decide to create $4 trillion. They did most of this after the stimulus failed to stimulate.
The Fed upped the ante. With interest rates already at zero, the Fed's only way to juice the economy was to print more money, with a technique called quantitative easing, or QE.
You have what degree of confidence in your ability to control this?
100%.
100% confidence.
Japan's been doing quantitative easing for the last 15 years. So they've tried
it before. They're not doing so well.
It just hasn't worked. And I think the problem is the Fed is engaging in experiments, and you know, they're not really letting on to that.
And they get stuff wrong all the time. Here's what Ben Bernanke said before the housing bubble burst.
The problem, the subprime market, seems likely to be contained.
Wrong. And they deny that they basically print money.
Sounds like they're printing money. Nuh-uh.
One myth that's out there is that what we're doing is printing money. We're not printing money.
Is that tax money that the Fed is spending?
It's not tax money. It's much more akin to printing money than it is to borrowing.
You've been printing money.
Well, effectively.
So good for John Stewart for getting that one right. But why the line?
They're creating $1 trillion of new currency each year digitally. They're not printing it anywhere. And they're buying things.
It's not exactly printing, but they're creating it.
They're creating it out of thin air, which you know, shocks a lot of people, but that's the fact.
The line in the movie that most touched me was when you say that these two Fed chairmen, appointed by Republicans and Democrats, have increased central planning in our economy more than ever in history. In secret.
They're at $500 billion of mortgages. They're the biggest player in the housing market.
By far.
With $2 trillion or more of government debt, they almost have twice
central
China.
Planning. It so, didn't work in communist countries.
Throughout history, we've seen that market economies do better than centrally planned ones. And the question is, knowing that, why in the wake of the crisis, why are we choosing to give the Fed more power and influence? In the film, we argue they should start handing that power back to the markets.
Thank you, Jim Bruce. Your film's great. And people can, if you go to my website, you can find out how you can see it. And we'll play more of it throughout this show. Now, when the housing bubble burst about 5 years ago, the Fed committed even more of our money to keeping Wall Street afloat.
Stocks crushed today.
Bank of America down 40%.
One of the worst days ever on
Wall
Street.
This is a market driven by fear.
It was a bank run. One that bore no relation to those of the past, involving not just the banks the Fed was created to protect, but the hedge funds, investment banks, and insurance conglomerates.
Imagine if 10 or 12 or 15 firms had failed.
Are you committing in this interview that you are not going to let any of these banks fail? That no matter what their balance sheet actually looks like, they are not going to fail?
They're not going to fail.
So we got the doctrine, too big to fail. It was implied before, but now it was clear, and many people believe that the Fed saved us from another depression. Economist George Selgin of the University of Georgia studies this. They saved us, I'm told.
Well, they didn't save us. First of all, we've had a recession, and a really bad one. And it's now over 5 years since the crash.
It would have been worse if they didn't bail out all these banks and print all this money.
Well, and as a matter of fact, it would have been a lot better, especially if they hadn't bailed out Bear Stearns. That got the ball rolling where all the other financial firms started to take greater risks, the big ones, thinking they'd be bailed out too.
And now, too big to fail, we're just stuck with that because they even get to borrow money more cheaply because people assume they're too big to fail.
Yeah, there's no end to this process unless something is done to cut the powers of the Federal Reserve.
So would you abolish the Fed? Some people say that.
I would abolish it as the kind of institution it is today. We've got a paper dollar, so something has to keep it scarce. It's not naturally so. But that could be done by a computer regulating the supply of the stuff according to a simple rule.
Like bitcoins.
Yes, in essence, though maybe a better rule than the bitcoin rule. But the point is, what we have now is a Fed with unlimited power and discretion, which means the power and discretion to make some huge mistakes, and it doesn't show any sign of improving over time.
And what's the alternative? There's something called free banking.
That's right. Several nations prospered and had financial stability without any central banks. Canada had no central bank until some years into the Depression, and it didn't create it because of the Depression, I want to add.
And they copied America, probably.
They partly copied America, that's right. But prior to 1914, when we established the Fed, the Canadian free currency system with a bunch of private banks supplying currency...
And that just means, to be clear, each bank could make its own currency and you could trust it or not.
That's right. And the notes of these different banks were just their IOUs.
Their
reputation. And they were nationally branched banks because Canada allowed it and the U.S. didn't at that time. They had a remarkably superior record to the U.S.
Fewer banks failed in Canada.
Many fewer banks failed. In the Great Depression, it's a notorious fact that while we had the Fed that was supposed to prevent bank failures, thousands of U.S. banks failed. In Canada, not even one bank failed throughout the whole 1930s.
Now, I'm annoyed at the people around me who say, you know, a few more rules would have prevented the housing crash and the banking crash. And, you know, that's why we need this. Dodd-Frank, all these pages. But this is absurd. Why would bureaucrats who are supposed to enforce this have the wisdom to prevent the housing bubble when their boss had no clue it was coming? Before the crash, Bernanke was asked, might the housing market crash?
What is the worst case scenario if, in fact, we were to see prices come down substantially?
Well, I guess I don't buy your premise. It's a pretty unlikely possibility. We've never had a decline in house prices on a nationwide basis.
The Fed was the last to really see the crisis coming. And yet, at the same time, they were helping to fuel that housing boom.
So now we're going to get Janet Yellen.
She's not going to be much different than Ben Bernanke. I think, if anything, she might err even more on the side of easy money than he did.
That's what everybody says. Thank you, George Selgin. Coming up, so far the Fed's bond buying hasn't caused that much inflation, but might that change? Will we soon have to go to the grocery store with this? A wheelbarrow full of money? It's happened in other countries. Will it happen here? Next, coming up. Do you trust these? Inflation today is about 2% a year. Not bad. That means this dollar will be worth probably almost a dollar next year. But 2% adds up. Earlier in the show, we pointed out that the dollar's lost 96% of its value since the Fed started. That means it takes $23 to buy what $1 bought 100 years ago. could be much worse. Inflation was 10% when I started reporting. If that kept up for a century, it would take $12,000 to buy what $1 bought. And if you think that's bad, this note is a $100 trillion bill. It's from Zimbabwe, where idiot rulers printed money like crazy. And eventually, even this $100 trillion became worthless. But probably the most famous example of destructive inflation happened in Germany after World War II. Germany lost the war, and the victors, including the United States, demanded reparations. But Germany didn't have any money, so the German central bank, the Reichsbank, started printing German bonds to fund reparations and other spending. Sound familiar? German marks became worth less and less, so much so that soon companies brought wheelbarrows to the banks just to make their weekly payroll. And soon afterward, as inflation continued, individual shoppers would have to show up with wheelbarrows to carry cash to the store to buy groceries. And finally, money was so worthless, people used it for wallpaper. Now, America is not post-war Germany, but might we suffer horrible inflation? Maybe, says the author of Currency Wars, The Making of the Next Global Crisis. That's James Rickards. He studies the history of nations that cheapen money. But I assume, James, we're smarter. We're different.
Well, we're not smarter, I don't think, John. You showed some clips earlier with Ben Bernanke saying the crisis would blow over, housing prices couldn't go down. So here's the head of the central bank getting things wrong time after time. By the way, the Fed has one of the worst forecasting records in economics. It's hard to find a worse forecasting record. So I'm not sure how much smarter we really are at the leadership level.
But inflation's low. They're printing all this money. Inflation's low.
Well, inflation actually is low as measured by the government. But we're just waiting for the spark, and it won't take very much. Where the Fed gets it wrong, they think they're playing with a thermostat. You know, if the house is too cool, you dial it up. If the house is too warm, you dial it down. So Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke say, you know, if this inflation starts, don't worry about it. We'll dial it back down again. But what they don't understand, once the behavior changes, once the spark hits, it gets out of control very quickly. This happened in the 70s, happened in the Weimar Republic, it's happened elsewhere. That's the part the Fed doesn't understand.
And in the Weimar Republic, that's Germany, it got so bad you have a bill that illustrates part of the problem.
This is a 100,000 mark note from the Reichsbank. They were printing so much money they ran out of ink and paper. They only printed it on one side. You see the back is blank because they didn't want to use the ink. That's how bad it was. They were physically constrained from printing more, so they came up with these workarounds.
People would go out to eat and pay for the meal at the beginning of the meal.
That's right. It would cost three times more by the end of the meal, even over the course of an hour or two. So you'd negotiate your dinner bill up front and pay it up front so the restaurant wouldn't charge you more at the end. There was social unrest. People from the city marched out to the country. They looted farms. They killed cows. They dragged the meat back to the city.
Just to have food.
It was just to have food. It was a lot worse than some of the anecdotes would lead you to believe.
And it led to the anger and the rise of Hitler.
Correct. It fed directly into that. There were, of course, other things involved. But yes, and the thing with it, with inflation or hyperinflation, which is what you get, are winners and losers. The winners are people who can see it coming. They have hard assets. Warren Buffett's a good example. He bought the Burlington Northern Railroad. A railroad is all hard assets. It's land, mining rights, rail, etc. So he was dumping dollars and getting into hard assets.
The industrialist does okay because he still has his factory.
The industrialist does okay. The banker does okay because, remember, for them, dollars are liabilities, not just assets. Speculators do okay. People who buy gold, fine art, things like that do okay.
Savers get killed.
Good. Savers, people with insurance policies, annuities, retirement income. In other words, the everyday Americans get crushed.
But at the moment, 2% inflation?
Well, a couple things on that, John. First of all, 2% is not benign. 2% cuts the purchasing power of the dollar in half in 35 years and half again in another 35 years. So an average lifetime is 70 years.
And
it's only going to be worth a quarter of what it was. But it's 2% for the time being. It starts slowly, but it can happen very quickly.
Let's hope it doesn't. Thank you, James Rickard. Coming up, we'll talk to a close advisor to President Obama who says we need the Fed. But first, Ron Paul's here, and he says abolish the Fed. Which is...
It's long overdue. We need to audit the Federal Reserve.
It's past time to audit the Federal Reserve.
We have a much more disruptive business cycle than we ever had before we had the Federal Reserve.
politicians criticizing the Fed. I never used to hear that. Maybe because few understood the Fed or even economics. But whatever the reason, this new interest is a good thing. And I think it happened mostly because one presidential candidate talked about the Fed. For decades, he was the only politician talking about it. And he, of course, is the author of End the Fed, Ron Paul. So, Dr. Paul, those two Democrats and your son want to audit the Fed. You want to end it. How can you be so sure when so many smart people say we need the Fed for stability?
The mess that we're in now is a consequence of the Fed. The Fed has been getting away too long for their responsibility. First, they create the artificial bubbles, and they get a lot of credit for that. Then the crash comes, the correction comes, and then they claim, well, we'll print money faster, and we'll get you out of it, and they get credit for, you know, the bump upward. No secret cabal of bankers or government officials should have the authority to create money out of thin air, because they will, and they will destroy the money. It's been known for a long time, way back to ancient Chinese history, they tried this, and it doesn't work. This is what the Constitution said. Nothing but silver and gold can be legal tender. That was the law that was written. Hayek has suggested maybe the best transition would be just to legalize competition, though the book is written to...
Currency competition.
Right. Currency competition where the market, you know, maybe Bitcoin offers competition.
Which is legal as far as so far.
Well, but the government doesn't like it either. So we have to wait and see what they do about it. They'll probably crack down on it.
But when you say attach it to gold, I look at gold prices since 1970, and that's not been a stable currency.
If you want to look for stability of gold and purchasing power, look at it over maybe 500 years, and you know an ounce of gold has certainly maintained a fairly steady purchasing power.
So this group of men has created $4 trillion. People seem fine with that.
I just think a lot of grown-up people think it's fine, and if you have a problem, you just print more. If you have a problem with debt, you just spend more. Matter of fact, Keynesian economics teaches this. Any type of slowdown, you're supposed to spend more money. And if people won't do it, the government has to do it. If they don't have the money, they try to borrow it, but there's no money to borrow. They just print it out of thin air.
Austrian economics says this will lead to rampant inflation, and yet we haven't had it yet.
No, we haven't had rampant inflation, but we have a lot more inflation than they'll admit to. We certainly had bad inflation in the 70s. I think we have a lot of inflation now. The whole point of Austrian economics is when you destroy the currency by printing a lot of money, you ruin the middle class, you really punish the poor, and you help the wealthy. The money goes to the wealthy class. And right now, today, the money is in the top 1% or 10%. And it's not because of free markets. It's not because of capitalism. It's because of this distortion in the currency. The rich get richer. And look, the middle class is getting wiped out. And it's a consequence of the money system.
Now, you say we don't need a Fed, but most every country has a central bank now. And you say we have bubbles and inflation because of the Fed, but we had bubbles and inflation before we created the Fed.
We did. But if you look between the time we went back on the gold standard in the 1870s up until World War One, it was very, very stable and very, very good economic.
Nine recessions from 1883 to 1913. Three recessions in the 30 years up to now.
And when the Fed stayed out, these recessions were very minor. They got over. And the Depression lasted for 15 years. And just look at what's happening in Japan. They're not a booming economy. And look at what's happening to us now.
And without their central banks, they would be booming?
I believe they would be. I really do. It wouldn't be perfect. There'd always be problems because you always have government. But the marketplace handles these things. But there will be distortions, but they're corrected quickly. And the people who overextended themselves, they're the ones that punish.
Thank you, Ron Paul. Up next, an advisor to President Obama who says Ron Paul is just wrong. Some people are fed up with the Federal Reserve. Some, like Ron Paul, want to abolish it. But plenty of smart people defend the Fed. Economist Austin Goolsbee, who until recently was chair of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisers, says we need the Fed. Austin, why?
The Fed basically does two things that matter a lot for the country. The first is, in normal times, It's controlling the money supply slash interest rate decisions. And by doing that and doing it independently of congressional control, it's kept inflation at very manageable levels for the most part in the United States. And the second is, in times that aren't normal times, like big financial crises, the Fed is the only thing that prevents the entire system from exploding. And that's partly why they invented the Fed, is when we did not have a Fed and we had these big financial crises, it would bring down the entire economy in Great Depression-like events.
But we had the Great Depression after we had the Fed. And before we had the Fed, there were plenty of recessions, but they were over quickly.
While technically true on the first that the Fed did exist, the Fed system as we have it now did not. It was like they were reverse printing money. And that's what led to the depressions. Now,
they've learned from that. They're smarter now.
I think they have learned. You know, they're certainly more educated. I don't know if they're more intelligent.
We had the Fed in the 70s. We had 13% inflation.
Yeah, true. The inflation of the 70s is not necessarily caused by the Fed. But it is true that until Paul Volcker comes in and says, look, we're going to squeeze this inflation out of the system, no matter how bad it hurts, we definitely had a rising inflation expectations environment. That was a pretty tough and dark history, a dark spot on the history of the Fed. So I'm not meaning to say in any way that central bankers are omniscient or they only do what is right. I'm just saying it's important to have the Fed there, and there's not really an alternative. You know, if you say, well, if the Fed weren't there, would we not have had an inflation in the 1970s? I don't know.
As an alternative, what about competing currencies? Free banking. Let the Goldsby Bank can print a bill, the Stossel Bank can print, and the people would choose.
And Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin. We went through a period like that in the United States. That's the way it used to be. There was no Fed. Every bank could print its own money. The thing is, as you might imagine, if you could print your own money, a lot of people go out and print money. If you don't have an oversight authority that has a legal commitment to try to focus on price stability the way the Fed has and its dual mandate, I think you run the risk of big problems.
Ron Paul just argued that the Fed inflates bubbles and gets credit for the boom. And then the bust happens, and then they ease money, and they get credit for the recovery.
Look, there is some element of truth, I think, to the view that if central banks do things wrong, they could inflate bubbles. I think it's rather important to emphasize there's absolutely no evidence that there are more bubbles or more intense bubbles under central banks than there are when there weren't central banks.
Do you get nervous about giving a dozen people so much power over so much money?
Yeah, so you know, sometimes I think we all should. Look, we're Americans. We're the most suspicious of authority people there are on Earth. That said, I get over that suspicion when I start looking at countries where they don't make the Fed independent. You tend to see much higher average inflation rates over time.
It just confuses me that we can give a dozen old white people the power to spend $4 trillion.
Yeah, but be a little careful with that. In normal times, what they're doing is deciding whether the interest rate goes up, goes down, or stays the same.
But now they're loaning money and buying all these bonds.
They're buying securities. They're not. What I was going to object to a little bit is this saying that they're spending money. When you're in an environment that what we call a zero lower bound environment, where you can't loosen monetary policy because you're already at zero, the Fed is just trying to figure out how do you loosen monetary policy when you face that kind of a thing.
And you don't worry about sudden, horrible inflation? There's all this money sloshing around now. They printed it.
Well, I don't. I worry about many things. I'm an economist, so we just sit around every night worrying. We can barely sleep. But of all the things I worry about, rampant immediate danger of hyperinflation is definitely not in my top 10, because if you look, economists know a lot about what leads to high inflation. And it's not just the expansion of the monetary base. That's what I think a lot of the, let's call them the gold bugs, the people afraid of immediate inflation, look at the expansion of money and they say, hey, Milton Friedman taught us that expansion of money equals inflation. And what they're forgetting is that in that formula of economists, what matters is not just the monetary base, it's also the velocity of money. Are banks lending? Is the financial system healthy? On one hand, the Fed is on one side printing money, if you want to think of it as that way. But for every bank that's not lending, whereas in the 2000s they were, that's doing the reverse. That's deprinting money. And all the Fed's doing when it's expanding the monetary base is making up for all of the demonetizing that's going on in the fundamentally broken credit system. As that starts to heal, the Fed will get out of the positions that it's in.
Well, I hope you're right. Austin Goolsbee, thank you. Up next.
You bet. My pleasure.
Up next, Fed governors being tortured and murdered. It didn't really happen. It's a new bestseller about the Fed. I hate to admit this, but important as the Fed is, I've avoided doing shows about it because the Fed is, well, boring and confusing. When I asked people what it was, this was really a typical answer. What's the Fed?
The what? The Fed?
The Fed.
F-E-D, Fed? The federal government?
People know very little about the Federal Reserve, even though it has the power to play around with trillions of our dollars. So I should report on it, but the details are boring, and I work on competitive television. So if I bore you and you stop watching, I lose my job. I lose this show, which I'd like to keep. So I've avoided this show on the Fed until now. After all, you don't see any writers putting out bestsellers about the Fed. Well, actually, you do. One, Brad Thor, and his latest book, Hidden Order, is a bestseller, and it's about the Fed. So why'd you put in this boring institution?
It's actually not that boring, and I write thrillers, so my job is to give you a great beach read from cover to cover. But if you walk away from the book having learned more, then I think that's icing on the cake. And for me, the Fed is fascinating, particularly how much secrecy it shrouds itself with on purpose.
They formed it in secret.
Absolutely. There were a bunch of bankers with a few government officials that stole out of New York City one night in 1910. Didn't even use the train station here. They went to Hoboken so nobody would see them. Said they were going on a duck hunting trip. And they went down to Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia and hatched this big plan to launch the third central bank in America's history.
Two previous ones had failed and been killed.
Absolutely.
But you make it seem sinister. Maybe they were just trying not to roil the markets.
The central banks were incredibly unpopular with the American people. In fact, all the participants that went down to Jekyll Island used assumed names or only first names because they didn't want this to get out. They knew this was not going to go over well with the American people.
Because?
Because the Eastern bankers were hated at this time in America's history.
They were viewed as manipulators of the ordinary people.
Absolutely. And you had banks booming in the South, in the West, and you also had businesses deciding, we don't need the banks. We're going to take our profits and reinvest them in our own businesses. So this cabal got together to save and monopolize the banking industry for themselves.
And as you say, it was the third. The first one was in 1791. It lasted about 20 years. With the war debt taken care of, people no longer saw the need. Congress closed it. They didn't want a central bank.
They did not.
The second bank, 1816, Andrew Jackson closed it. He said it was susceptible to corruption.
Absolutely. You can look at Thomas Paine, who inspired the American Revolution with his pamphlet, Common Sense, said that central banking, in particular the printing of money, was the surest road to despotism and the loss of liberty.
All right. But today, most of the so-called experts say we need a central bank. It makes sure inflation is moderate. It helps with employment.
That's the smoke that comes out of the Federal Reserve. One of the biggest...
But more than the Federal Reserve. You talk to any smart financial person around.
How about this? You're a capitalist, I'm a capitalist. We both like free markets.
Yeah.
Everything needs to have some sort of a litmus test to tell you if it's working. The dollar has lost 96% of its value since the Fed came on the scene. We had the Great Depression under the Fed.
Many years ago. We did have the Great Depression.
20 years after the Fed came around.
But now, Milton Friedman pointed out they made a mistake, and they've learned from their mistake.
Well, the Fed has redefined the term inflation over 20 times since the 1970s. There's a lot of things. Again, I write thrillers, and I picked the Fed because I thought this shadowy, all the stuff in there is not conspiracy. Conspiracy theory, John. The stuff I put in was well-researched data and history about the Fed that I think people will find fascinating, wrapped in a great thriller.
And one thing I love about your book is that you have the hero read Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Easy Lesson.
It really is economics in one easy lesson. And the founders warned us that the greatest threat to our liberty was ignorance of currency, coinage, and how the monetary system works. So as an American, it's important for me to at least raise these issues in the public square.
Well, I'm glad you brought your talents to this important subject. Thank you, Brad Thor. Coming up, why would you give this woman permission to spend $4 trillion of our money secretly? Over the next weeks, we'll hear more about Janet Yellen, the president's nominee for Fed chair. Some people will praise her, others will attack her. I say, I don't much care who the chairman is. Janet Yellen may be scarier than some because she's pushed for more stimulus, but all the candidates share the same belief that they, a dozen people, can manage our economy. What conceit! And our leaders voluntarily give them this unbelievable power. Let's put it in perspective. Our bloated government will spend $3.5 trillion this year. This is a crazy amount of money. It's almost double what we spent when Bill Clinton was president. Yet also this year, quietly, the Fed bought government bonds and bank paper, some of which is junk, and lent money to banks, raising its balance sheet, our balance sheet, to $3.6 trillion, just as much as our whole government spent. And most of what the Fed does, it does secretly. Now, I don't want to trust them. I want to believe they're brilliant people who know what they're doing and mean well. But no 12 people know enough. Knowledge is dispersed throughout our economy, throughout the world. When central bankers try to manage an economy, they usually make things worse. In the 70s, the Fed wrecked lives by enabling double-digit inflation. The new movie about the Fed explained how the Fed governors felt pressured.
They would tell each other, we're not going to let the inflation get out of hand this time. And then the unemployment rate would rise and all that would be forgotten. The whole climate of opinion was against them.
Eventually, Paul Volcker got them to tighten money and inflation did subside. But years later, after the dot-com bubble burst, they brought easy money back again.
The Fed had softened the dot-com crash with aggressive interest rate cuts. And now those same cuts set off another boom.
We actually found that it was kind of interesting and stimulating to put it into houses,
which created an unsustainable bubble in housing.
So we ended up encouraging a housing boom. We, being the Federal Reserve, ended up encouraging a housing boom.
Ben Bernanke, the professor who had just been hired by the Fed, said, we're not going to let prices fall. We are going to create enough dollar bills to lift the prices of everything by a little.
We didn't want to see people out of jobs. Well-intentioned. But the consequences are we created the incentives to borrow.
The housing bubble led to the housing bust.
14 million people took a mortgage in the last 3 years. 7 million of them will lose their homes. This is crazy.
This was textbook. When you take rates that low, you're going to have a boom and a bust is likely to follow.
And I don't think any of us who've ever worked at the Fed take any comfort from the fact that somebody screwed up.
Everybody wants to go back and say, things are fine now. Look, we solved our problem. We're just asking for another crisis.
This is an experiment. We've never done this before. We've never been here before. The Federal Reserve is really operating by the seat of their pants.
And we're supposed to trust these people. And most recently, the Fed printed $1 trillion to prop up failing banks, some in foreign countries. More money than the TARP bailouts, which Congress at least voted on. And the Fed money was secret. The trillion only became public because of a Freedom of Information request. We looked for people to defend the Fed on this show. Austin Goolsbee did step up, but it was harder to find someone than I thought it would be. Not long ago, it was only libertarians like Ron Paul who criticized the Fed.
There is no authority in the Constitution authorizing a central bank, which means there should be no Federal Reserve System.
Yeah, well, there is. And today they spend trillions of our dollars, often in secret, and people have no clue about it.
What's the Fed? I don't know.
What's the what?
The Fed.
I don't know.
At least a few people pay attention.
It's a central bank that...
What's it do?
Determines monetary policy and...
What's monetary policy?
How much money to be allowed into circulation.
Three cheers for that guy. Let's hope more people start paying attention. We're talking about trillions of your dollars here. That's our show. See you next week.